The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
I'm so delighted to be here. I love Philadelphia, and I love this library. And obviously, I've been following your travails and efforts to keep it going. Yes, full strength. Let me know what I can do to help. I have a slideshow here, which is not to say that I knew how to do a slideshow before I started doing research for this book. I was pretty much an old-fashioned writer. And another reason that I wanted to do this book, not just because I was inspired to catch as many librarians as possible before they hit the obit page, I wanted to meet the living ones who were helping to reshape the field in the information age. But I was also increasingly baffled by computers and what I was seeing on the screen. And I thought this would be a wonderful opportunity to learn more about that. And I got that idea when I showed up at my reference desk and was palling around with one of the librarians. I've always been friends with librarians. They've had my back forever as a writer. I started weeping. I don't know how to save the stuff I find on the web anymore. All these jazzy graphics make my word processing programs crash. And she said, oh, what browser are you using? And I'm like, what's the browser? She pulls down the little edit menu and says, see this? Save page as. You press that, you click when the little prompt comes up, and your computer takes a picture of the whole freaking page. Oh, my God. So I started hanging around there getting, you know, they had kept up with what was happening in computers in a way that the poor writers had not. And so I really apprenticed myself to these jazzy librarians and thought I would find the, you know, ultimate nest of them and get the whole story. So I'm going to sort of gallop through some of the high points of my book, with this little presentation. Oh, I forgot. The whole point of telling you why I have a slideshow is that one of the first librarians I watched in action was explaining the difference between digital immigrants and digital natives. Immigrants, that's me, okay? Babushka, Borat accent. Natives, my children, okay? That's the shorthand. And she says, if you think you can talk to a room full of people and just read to them or just talk to them anymore, you are so over and outdated. I'm sorry. You've got to show some pictures and get everybody engaged. So I learned how to do the picture part. And you can tell me if I did okay. Part one. In the age of Google, who needs librarians? Do you not hear this everywhere? Ah, they can just use Google. What do they need a person for? Okay, sample question. Excuse me, where can I find information about Buddhism? She looked on Google and found 592,000 entries, some of them duplicates. Some of them clearly fraudulent, all of them having to do with shaking your booty. Video results for Buddhism, booty meat. This is a mesmerizing YouTube video. I'm not kidding. My husband and I stood there watching. 5 million hits. Okay, but the little woman with the hat, she's like, this is not what she's looking for. Trained to prompt, the librarians did not give up. Buddhism. Botulism? Bootsy Collins? That one is a real librarian. Archival things. Ah, not Buddhism. Buddhism. Buddhism now, 15,400,000 hits. Okay? So is the lady enlightened? Well, yes. She has helped someone. She has had help from someone who has helped her figure out that she didn't know what she didn't know. But she's also now got help sorting through 15,400,000 entries, plus getting guided choices and selections of the books that she might need. Okay? She didn't look like a third grader doing a book report, but that's what she was, and so this is what she gets referred to. Now, in conclusion, I say, for part one, we need librarians for all the old reasons. We need them as community builders, reaching out to children, gathering people around and telling stories. And we need them for some newer reasons, too. Librarians pick up where social services and teachers leave off. And I'm sure you all are not surprised to find out that people looking for work are going to the library now. But people who are looking for help navigating the bureaucracy are going to the library. People who are watching, you know, their school library hours get cut are coming to the library. In fact, the library has been a wonderful sort of pool for all the things that don't get contained by the rest of society. They spill over into the library. And when you think about shutting the doors of the library, you have to think about what kind of stress that would put on the system. This is what I was really interested in, though. Librarians bridging the digital divide. I was told by an expert that I needed, you know, photographic metaphors here, so. Bridge, see? That's what I'm really interested in. I'm interested in libraries and librarians sort of taking charge and owning that franchise of our public computers. And what you see when you go to Europe are all these places where you go and you give them a euro or two and you can sit and use public computers in a little cafe. Here, you go to the library. And you go to the library for many other reasons, but what if you don't have a computer? What if your computer's on the blink? What if you don't have a computer, you don't really speak the language, you're trying to get a job, and the only way you can do it is by filing it online? What do you do if you're the one-fifth of this country that doesn't have access to a computer otherwise? Or as all the people in the county that I live in, we're out of electricity, well, let's see, the first time 5 days after the snowstorm, the second time the nor'easter, that was about 4 days, our public libraries were jammed, and people were fighting over the plugs because we couldn't get them at home, and there were libraries in our area. In Danbury, Connecticut, they were sending out Twitters that said, "Don't worry, we're leaving the library open till 11 p.m. for everybody who doesn't have electricity. And don't worry about American Idol. We'll have it playing in one of the rooms." Isn't that great? I think that was like really, you know, you don't close the library in times of stress. You open it. And this is one of my favorite pictures here. It's an old-fashioned public library. And engraved over the door is the phrase, "open to all." And I really think that captures an American value. It's a demonstration of what our democracy stands for. Free access, you know, free expression, and open to all, not just the taxpayers of that area, anybody who wants to come and use the library. Because who else can you trust? Now, I will not share with you the rather R-rated Wikipedia entry that I found. But, of course, I've been monitoring in the course of about 3 years that I was researching this book. I was monitoring Wikipedia very carefully because I knew that there were errors in it that appeared in it. And I was looking for a really good one, and boy, did I find one. It was up for about 2 minutes, I think. I caught it. Anyway, you'll have to read that part in the book. Who else can you trust? Obviously, the zooming librarian, Kindle in hand, pile of books at her feet, or his feet. And, of course, the superhero cape. Part two. Okay, this is a picture of me during a really low point. You know, my eyes were infected. My kid had just hit me with one of those, paintball things. I was in the woods. I'm getting poison ivy. Techno-stressed author hunts creative librarians, is essentially. And I'm going to kind of lope through examples of some of the librarians that I came across and what I think they represent for why I think they can save us. Now, obviously, save us, maybe not so obviously, is a pun, okay? They're saving our culture. They're saving our local history. And they're saving, they personally saved me. I don't know about you. We'll see. I went to my neighborhood librarians, obviously, and I found some great stories there. This is my friend Zara from the Chappaqua Public Library in New York. And Zara has a real interest in film and in children. She is now the teen librarian there. And she has a group of teens who come and hang out with her. They do their homework. They play Guitar Hero. They learn how to do animation on the computer because she's really into film and into doing that kind of thing. And she is giving the teens a safe place to hang out. Okay, duh. I mean, that's like one of the best things about the library. But Zara is also there pushing everybody a little bit further in their technological abilities. And she picked up some of hers because at Chappaqua, just like in Philadelphia, they create their own programming. And so when anybody comes to speak at the library, they have a video running. And they make a CD or a DVD, and then you can check it out at the desk. Doesn't that make an awful lot of sense? Well, there was one guy who would run the equipment, and he wanted to go home one night. So he showed Zara real quick how to do it. And she realized, I love this stuff. And so she's been, spreading the word ever since. I came across this guy. I mean, believe me, he did not look like this the days that I was following him around. He's a writer's librarian who worked for the New York Public Library. And he noticed, this is a big research library, the one at 42nd and 5th, world destination, world-class destination. He noticed that some of the people who seemed to be the most baffled, confused, upset, near tears, having nervous breakdowns in his area were writers. Okay, so we're morons. And he has made it his mission in life to define writers as a needy population. Okay? And I thought this was fascinating, not just because I'm a writer, but because, of course, who writes the books that fill the libraries? Of course they need the libraries more than most people, and they deserve the most support in getting better books to put in the library, making the best books they can. So it's fascinating that he would cling to this idea. He got recognized for this and was made a literary lion, a library lion of the New York Public Library. Alas, had to take early retirement, but is still pursuing this notion that we haven't thought of all the populations that need extra library help. Here are two of the international students at St. John's University in Queens. And in Queens, I found a nest of missionary librarians. And these were teaching academic librarians whose job was to make a long-distance master's program in what they called global development and social justice possible. And what they do is these librarians go to Rome every summer, And for a month, they sit there with students from all over the world, mainly from developing countries, who were there on scholarship and who are speaking English sometimes as a third language. And they get a laptop computer, they get a camera, they get all the tools that they need to stay in touch with the world, and the librarians teach them crash courses in how to do their schoolwork online, how to connect with the community of students and faculty online, how to go back to their community and record what's happening there, drought conditions, maternal health conditions, anything else that comes up. These people come, and they are missionaries, and the librarians are missionaries, and their job is creating information justice throughout the world. So that was really one of my favorite chapters because I got to go to Rome. But it was also really inspiring to see what information literacy and people who took it very seriously could create. I found street librarians. Now, this is a protest. 500,000 people expected on the streets of New York during the 2004 Republican National Convention. And there were librarians in New York who said they're going to need help, and they're going to need help combating rumors. My thinking and their thinking is that rumors are the engines of mobs. And so what they need is good, hard information. And, of course, if you've been to New York, there are no public toilets. So they're also going to need somebody to tell them where to go. So they armed themselves with the 2004 version of a smartphone. They had librarians stationed at libraries who would take their telephone calls. They had binders full of information, legal aid numbers, lists of streets that were closed, lists of where the candidates were, you know, anything else they needed, where to find a vegan burger. And they went out into these crowds and into these actions. And there were a lot of arrests, and there wasn't any violence. I think that might have had something to do with them. There's a chapter about them. They were called themselves Radical Reference, and they're now around the world. I also found blogging librarians. One of the first I found was a librarian who called herself Librarian Avengers. And her tagline is, "Why you should fall to your knees and worship a librarian." I love the attitude that I found. And of course, I mean, maybe you guys know it, maybe a lot of you are librarians, but librarians are really pretty darn funny. And they sit there behind the desk with their poker faces, and you don't really know until you start talking to them. Erica says, "What is this site about? This site is about kicking your butt if you don't start saying thank you at the reference desk." Don't librarians just stamp books? No, we have people for that. Why all the fuss? And this is, in a couple of sentences, what I think is the best way to capture librarians. "Librarians have been getting systematically underpaid and uncredited for about a century. The profession encompasses some of the world's finest minds who have chosen to anonymously help better your life, your research, and your children's future at the expense of their own glory." Okay? Isn't that very eloquently stated? And she also brings up a point, Erica Ferment, that anonymously is key. And there were many difficulties that I had in putting this book together, but persuading some of these librarians to participate was one of the biggest, because it embarrassed them to be out there with their name. They like to be, as the St. John's librarian told me, the guide on the side, not the sage on the stage. Here are more blogging librarians. And this is another thing, too. Librarians, if they find a subject they're interested in, they become expert at it, okay? And so a lot of them who are passionate about their subject, possibly underemployed, possibly freelancing, have hung up a shingle on the web and advertise themselves as experts in their passion. And you can you know, communicate with them. You can post questions. You can call them. You can, I mean, it's really incredible. I found the fantasy football librarian. You all know what fantasy football is? Okay, it's almost impossible to explain, but it's a huge phenomenon in which ordinary fans pretend they join a pool of other friendly fans, and they pretend that they own these players. So they have a draft, and they get somebody who plays on this team and somebody who plays on this team, and then they follow the statistics through a season, and whoever gets the best statistics is said to win. So you can look at players in professional teams on television and say, oh, you know, that's a Philly. But you don't know that that Philly is also a Flatermouse and a, you know, Deliwa or whatever. You know, they think up stupid names. They're basically puns on their anyway, it's stupid, but there's a librarian who knows everything about it, statistically and sports-wise, and she'll help advise you so you can have the best, most winningest team. Down there is the handmade librarian, who's one of my favorites. She is a rare books and manuscripts librarian who loves vintage knitting patterns, who loves old ways of doing handcrafts, who will answer any question, who will talk in her blog. Oh, my God, such a blog. You know, I mean, I don't do any of that stuff, none of that Pennsylvania Dutch stenciling, nothing. And she has things about, you know, the prisoners in Alcatraz used to knit things for the soldiers of World War I. Okay? That's pretty cool, right? She's digging up all this stuff. Okay, enough about them. Even more important, there are librarians out there blogging about technology and telling you about social networking, what you need to know about computers, what you need to know about smartphones, all that stuff. The librarian in black is a fabulous source, amazingly informed and therefore properly opinionated. They're clever, yes? This is Amanda Etches Johnson, who publishes blogwithoutalibrary.net. And Amanda and four young women librarians got together and put together a course, a self-guided course that's on the web that basically says 5 weeks to a social library. They were marketing it to librarians, but you don't have to be a librarian to take it, and that's how I learned about blogging, RSS feeds, you know, Twittering, all that mysterious stuff that I didn't know about. You could too, unless, of course, you already know all about it. I found virtual librarians, and it's actually a field of librarianship, virtual librarians, and it just means you're not sitting face-to-face with the person who's asking the questions. A new development that I'm really crazy about, not just the text. A librarian, I like that one. Email a librarian, they'll get back to you when they get the answer, fantastic. But 24/7 reference help. Now, this one, Know It Now, 24/7 answering your questions online anytime, is for residents of Ohio. This one, Ask NYPL, you don't have to be a resident of anything or have a card anytime. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, if you have something just bothering you that you want to know the answer to, now, they farm it out when the doors are closed. So after the library is locked up at night and before it opens in the morning, you may get a librarian in Washington State or in New Jersey or in Alabama who is moonlighting by being a reference librarian. But it's fantastic. It's a fantastic service. And then I found extreme virtual librarians, what I call the avatar librarians, these virtual reality sites that are cropping up. Now, this one is for a site called Second Life. You can download the software and get an avatar for free in 2 minutes and go into this world that is just almost indescribable, except that I actually attempt to describe it in the book. And what happens when you're there is that You can build things. You can create things. You can create communities, participate in communities. You can build a village. You can build a historic sim. You can, as some of the librarians that I met, help build a 19th century fantasy land that has more to do with Jules Verne than it does with the actual 19th century. And this is J.J. Drinkwater, who is basically the heart and soul of a community called Caledon, actually a culinary librarian, female. That one down there is a librarian who likes to put fairy wings on to express how helpful she is and how she would like to fulfill, you know, any of the questions that you have. She would like to take care of them. She's a public librarian in Australia. And people all get together. The librarians that are hanging out there are really inventing a kind of librarianship for a web that I think is going to be out there in a few years, a 3D-looking web. Okay, never mind. It's completely wild, and they are the coolest. And the ever-popular tattooed librarians. This is an academic librarian from Florida named Jason Plunkett, who knows quite a bit, and whose friend was so proud of him when he got his Master in Library and Information Science that he paid for a real fancy tattoo. And what I like about it, the skull on top of the stack of books is wearing a pair of glasses. And this is one of my favorite library signs. Free coffee, internet, notary, phone, smiles, restrooms, and ideas. And I think that really characterizes the new library. You know, it's a rest stop for anybody. This is, by the way, for a town of about 3,000 people. Teeny, teeny, teeny. But they're very ambitious librarians. We can rhapsodize all we want about particular libraries, as I would rhapsodize about this one that we're in right now. But librarians are the ones who make the library. They're the ones who build the collection. They're the ones who open the door. They're the ones who set the tone. They're the ones who guide the communities that gather there. And they're the ones who answer our questions. So when I say, what is a library? Everything in the world. I know this isn't the Milky Way, but isn't it beautiful? And a human to help sort it out. Oh, darn, she's supposed to whirl upside down and then say, truth, free speech. Oh, she did. Truth, free speech. You want to see that again? Let's see if it can. I did that myself. Truth, free speech, and universal literacy. So if you like them, you have to fight for them. And in tough times, a librarian is indeed a terrible thing to waste. Thank you all very much. Half an hour. Oops, so questions. Oh, I'm on a platform. How interesting.
Okay, so we'll start the Q&A now. If you could just raise your hand if you have a question, and someone with a mic will come to you.
Oh, could I ask a question? How many of you are librarians or related to a librarian? All right. Salute. Great. Excellent.
In the back over there.
Thanks. You mentioned that you think a library, public library should take up the role of filling that digital divide and having the free access to computers.
Yes.
I'm actually a library school student right now, and some articles that I read were actually saying that it shouldn't be just on the burden of the library and that other community organizations should take up this role as well. What would you have to say to them?
I'd say it's a fantastic opportunity for libraries and librarians, and I would just hang on to it with both hands.
I mean, it's great. You want help from other people. But do you think really we're going to be shutting the doors of our public, you know, of the libraries with the public computers in them? That is what people really need right now. I know they need the books, they need the DVDs, et cetera, but we are increasingly becoming an online world. When I started this book 3 years ago, I mean, I cannot tell you how fast it's going and how terrified I was while I was writing. It's going so fast. It's now government. How many government services are now online? And not just the option of being online. You can't get to them without being online. You know, I was in, took the Amtrak down, and I'm standing there, and somebody who didn't have a computer reservation and didn't have a credit card was, you know, missed his train because he couldn't prove he was who he was. You know, I mean, it's like it's mind-boggling right now. And I think if I were a librarian, I would throw my arms around those computers and embrace them and just make those people who use the computers as comfortable as possible. You know, teach them as much as you know. You don't need to know that much more than them to be useful. I mean, there are people who show up at reference desks saying, how do you make the little black triangle move, right? I mean, really, there are a lot of, you know, my parents were completely shut out of this, and it's just the greatest thing after you have a class of seniors and teach them how to do email and they get photographs of their grandchildren, you know, that were taken a few minutes ago. It's like so exciting to see that world open up. And, you know, of course, that's where a lot of information is now. So, yeah, it's great. The Rotary Club should help you out, but don't give it up, I would say.
In the front right here?
What?
As an old librarian, I really did love the book.
Thank you.
But I felt a certain tension in the book in your embracing the new technology and still hanging on to the old library skills that we provide, the old reference interview, as you demonstrated with Buddhism. Could you talk a little bit more about that, how you felt about your sense in dealing with the tensions that you encountered in doing the book?
Oh, it's very interesting. I mean, I think of myself as somebody, I'm a real old-fashioned person. And there is nothing I would rather do than sit in a window seat with a book, a really old book by a dead author. Wow. I think that's like the ultimate. By the same token, this is where we're all going, you know, and I'm very pleased. I'm sure you read my book in hardcover, right? It's also available as an ebook, as a Kindle, and as an audiobook. And am I upset about that? No, I am thrilled. I listen to audiobooks all the time. I take ebooks with me when I travel. I think I'm just embracing all of it, and I think it puts a huge burden on librarians to be able to provide that full range of things. But no one librarian has to actually cover the whole thing. If there are visionaries who are leading the libraries, and I believe you all have one, I know Siobhan. I think she's great. And, you know, who basically say, let's have all that great old stuff. That is what our civilization is built on, and that's a passion that we certainly want to convey to the next generation and the generations beyond, but we have to give up a little bit of our space to pay attention to what's going on there. And that struggle is something that every library system is going through. I document the struggle now going on at the New York Public Library, which is going too far in the other direction. I really think that they've given up an awful lot of that that fabulous research institution. They've put so many more resources into jazzing it up and turning a circulating library in the stacks, creating stacks where there weren't some, and putting so much into their digital, great, great digital initiatives. But, you know, I'm so worried about what is, you know, the things that are behind the door that people aren't speaking up for, because they're scholarly things, and you know, that's our knowledge. We don't want that going to the garage sale. So I tried to have it all. I want it all. I want all of us to have it all. And I want the doors open longer.
In the middle right there.
Oh, may I just add this? It's not like librarians are expensive, okay?
Hi, I just wanted to ask you a bit, in focusing so much attention towards this digital initiative, how have you found that particularly young librarians have been able to maintain the library as a social institution and keeping, you know, things like easel programs or interviewing skill programs, that kind of thing, when there's so much focus going into, you know, this new digital age and this new digital wave, how you maintain that focus and getting people actually through the door?
Mm. Well, it's like you go to the library and you just see them. There they are. It is incredible. And I always have somebody raise their hand and say, these young people today, they just don't go to the library the way we used to. So have you been to a library lately? I had just been to the University of New Hampshire library, which was so jammed. It was obviously where everybody was. But I, you know, I was very interested in the change in the profession, and I was very interested in the young librarians who were reinventing it. And I found some who were just fantastic. And one interesting thing that I found was librarians are so networked, and they talk to each other all the time. They're really very socially connected. And what was happening in a lot of libraries were the older librarians were learning stuff from the new librarians who came in and turning around and sharing their experience, people experience, and, you know, our old cranky machine experience, and learning how to do Flickr, you know, and social networking from the younger librarians. So, you know, in terms of actually having that human interaction with the patrons who are coming through the door, I think a lot of that is community-driven and driven by the individual libraries. And I see a lot of younger librarians who are very clear and very articulate. I've been writing a blog on my website, thisbookisoverdue.com. And one of them is this wonderful children's librarian who, I don't know, is she in her late 20s? I don't really know how old she is, but she's young. And she's just fantastic at articulating why there needs to be more prestige associated with children's librarianship. We are not glorified babysitters. We are helping your children turn into, you know, complete human beings. Did that answer your question? Thanks.
Okay, in the back there, in the blue shirt.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to ask if you could elaborate a little bit more on what you've mentioned it many times about how we're coming to value librarians maybe a little bit more in this digital age. And there are people who have written things like Daniel Pink's book, A Whole New Mind, and Annalee Rufus wrote a book called The Loner Manifesto, and stuff like how we're moving from a digital age into a creative age, and especially with Daniel Pink's book about how there's so much like material and there's so much information. And you had mentioned in your talk about how generating new books and how you have to facilitate. Could you just elaborate more about how that might affect how we value librarians in this upcoming age? I guess my question is, do you think that they'll be valued more as time goes by?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think it's happening now. Do you guys feel it? all the threats. I mean, they're awful. The L.A., California library system, the awful news that's coming out of there. I mean, you don't have to go very far to get the awful news. But I think a lot of people, I'm not the only one who's jumping to the microphone and saying, excuse me. Oh, and with reference to the other question about the computers in the libraries, here's a profession that actually cares about privacy that is in charge of our computers. I mean, brilliant, right? It's a great idea. And out there defending our right to privacy in using those computers. But in fact, you know, when I talk about the writer's librarian, I'm not talking about rarefied writers who've had several books put out by major publishers. I'm talking about anybody who calls themselves a writer. And more people are doing that. And more people are creating their blogs and writing things for them. You know, are putting books together of the photographs that they've made, who are really figuring out that this is a fantastic time to be alive. And you know what's so fantastic about it? You don't need to know programming to do all this stuff. I have a whole thing in the book about I get sort of obsessed with the amateur archivists who have added so much to our archives because they've collected passionately these things that nobody else ends up collecting, and that ends up writing the history. I saw a lot of things on the web that I wanted to collect, and there was no easy way to do that. And now, just in the past couple of years, there are programs that allow you to gather up the stuff you find on the web and organize it in a great way. So there are also kind of creative editing opportunities. And librarians can absolutely make a huge difference in this. I mean, I think that they really are, in the old-fashioned sense of connecting people and resources and people and information and people in literature, they're also connecting people with the means and the tools to do something with all of this, you know, to really, and of course, that's the best way to live, I mean, in my personal opinion, where you actually get to make something and see it. And I know that there are librarians who feel that way, who are using their blogs, for instance, or their library websites to collect all this great stuff and, you know, figure out how to make something of it. I haven't read the book that you mentioned. Daniel Pink? Mm-hmm. Well, and none too soon, in my opinion. Okay, I'll look it up. Thank you. There's a question.
I have two questions, if it doesn't bother somebody else. The first one is about the role of the library in a school. I imagine that, especially in the recession, many school systems are cutting their libraries in the schools and just say, well, we have libraries in the community, so why do we have to put a library in the school? What's your feeling about that?
Oh, you have to have a library. You should have a library everywhere, but how could you have a school without a library? That just seems insane to me. And there are a lot of articles. I mean, maybe this is what I'm sensing, along with all that bad news. There are people who are actually putting articles out there. There was a great one in the New York Times. There was a great one in Forbes just in the last few days about what these librarians in schools are doing. They are teaching information literacy to a generation that, we can assume they know stuff, but you start prodding them, and their heads are full of nonsense, complete nonsense that they've taken at face value because somebody posted it on the web. And, Google is just has changed all of our lives. It's a brilliant tool, but it's not brilliant enough, okay? It doesn't It doesn't organize stuff. It doesn't, you don't see the date. It's full of duplications. It doesn't evaluate it. It doesn't do any number of things that you have to do if you're really going to take a bite of the information and run with it. It's wonderful if you want the address of a restaurant, you know? It's great if you want to track the rumors about a kid's camp. I found some interesting things out that way. But, you know, and it's really fun if you are out there with a book and you want to see what people are saying. But it's just not going to get the science paper written. It's not going to do it. And I think that there are some very active and articulate school librarians who are out there speaking for the profession, and there are a lot of journalists who are listening and who are very sympathetic to it and are trying to spread the word. We're all taking it pretty darn seriously right now, since libraries are the first thing to get cut in a squeezed budget. You had a second question.
I was very surprised to find out that the Philadelphia Free Library doesn't play any role in encouraging people to use open source software. For example, this library is totally dependent on Microsoft software, and now there's open source stuff, particularly this Ubuntu, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You don't pay for it. Mm-hmm. When you get it, every other program you need is also free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you want to make movies or anything else, those are all things that you pay for in the Microsoft system. And I'm not against Microsoft, but I can see that the way I'd want to go is, especially for elderly people and poor people, would be software that's basically free. And also, it turns out that the free software usually runs on older machines better than the Microsoft stuff. So our library has not pioneered. I mean, they could have somebody here teaching how to use this stuff or using it themselves. And when I spoke to the person here, they said, well, you know, I think Microsoft gives a deal to the libraries. I mean, they'd rather have their stuff used here than, you know, what they're competing with. So maybe they offer it for free or, a severe discount or something. So the library just kind of caves in and uses this stuff without thinking, well, what's the big picture? Shouldn't our patrons all be learning to use free stuff since it is available and you can just download it? Why would they be? The current price for Windows 7 is like $130 per computer to upgrade it. So that seems mad to me if there's a competing system that's free. And I know a lot of big systems like Google use the open source rather than paying Microsoft.
Yeah. Well, this is where a lot of young librarians, and not just young librarians, I mean, it's sort of, you know, generically you say young librarians, but there are older librarians who are also part of this movement who are out there blogging about the technological things, and it's a huge issue for them, open source, and they'll happily walk you through how to install Ubuntu on an old computer that you might otherwise throw out, which completely revives it and makes it useful. That's a wonderful thing. But one thing that I didn't get until I had really spent a lot of time with all these issues is a public library system is owned by the community. How do things get done? Okay, there are bureaucracies that are kind of run by, there's a library board that the administration has to respond to. There's a staff that has to respond to the administration. And there are patrons. Where does change come from in the system? Well, it's very interesting because you can't just sit back and assume that change will come from any one of those four places. It has to come from people speaking up and saying, this is what we want with our libraries. And librarians saying, let's offer the technology class, beginning computer skills to seniors, and let's also offer some, you know, wild out there, open source, you really know something about computers, let's take the old ones and repurpose them. Or it comes from a group of community people saying, look, would you address this issue? We'll set up a committee and see what we can find out about it. I think it's really about people being active and persistent politics. I mean, you know, so I don't think there's a lot of things that librarians have more and more and more jobs to do. I mean, if we could think of a million more jobs for them to do, and now let's have a big recession and all the job seekers show up at the library, so, oh, by the way, please be job counselors as well. They've got a lot on their plate. So if something comes up, like websites, when they were first coming up and, you know, the boilerplate websites in our county were really pretty pathetic, there was a website designer in one of the communities who said, can I volunteer my skills? I'll show you what I can do, and if you want to use it, great. I'll help you keep it live and so on. And it became a collaboration that was driven by, now there's a much more responsive website. And I think, I mean, it's like you can pin things on librarians, but they really do answer to their administrators and to their library boards. And it's very hard to get these initiatives going without people articulating it and offering to help be the engine that makes it happen. Okay.
Any more questions? In the back.
Oh, what a wonderful question. Do you have any ideas? I have an amazing schedule right now. It's sort of about the time that a book would quiet down, and I find that I'm speaking two or three times a week for a few months, and then I have a short break in the summer that's starting to fill in, and the fall is filling in, and I'm filling in some dates for next year. It looks like I'll be talking about libraries for a while. Oh, thank you. Thank you. But I would love to write another book. I mean, while I'm visiting the libraries, it'd be really fun to do some research. Thank you all. It's really been a pleasure. And I'll stay and sign books until they close the doors.
Thank you all for coming. There's a book.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Libraries Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.